on Pilot TV this week, we are keeping up with the Forsytes in The Forsytes on Channel 5, going abseiling down under with Lauren Lyle in The Ridge on BBC Two, and getting a little ASMR from Julia Roberts in Leonard and Hungry Paul, also on BBC Two. Plus, not only do we have Harlan Coben on this podcast to talk about Lazarus, his new show on Prime Video, but Bill Nighy also joins us for precisely the same reason. I'm James Dyer, and welcome to Pilot TV, your essential guide to every show that matters. And with me here are my two co-pilots, Kay Ribeiro, Boyd Hilton, which is very, very exciting. We're starting ever so slightly late today because of Jeremy Allen White, who was sitting in that chair not 15 minutes ago.
I feel the warmth of
That's right. The hot seat.
I'm feeling the warmth of the Jeremy Allen White butt as we speak.
Lucky so devil.
Carmi's buttock crevice is what you are currently sitting in.
Or in fact, Bruce's.
Because that's true.
He is Carmi, but right now he's Bruce Springsteen.
He's the boss.
Also, obviously, incredibly delightful for my eyes to see Jeremy.
And Stephen Graham,
who was in here
as well.
We should say Stephen Graham was here as well. Absolute legend.
Yes. So, legend.
Yeah.
Double legend activity.
It's been a star-studded fest.
You know who he plays in the film, Kay? It's a film.
No.
He plays Bruce Springsteen's dad.
Ooh.
In the film, even though obviously he's...
I have questions.
Yes. Yes. Far away. I could answer any questions
and
about
does
the film.
Does he play Jeremy Allen White's dad, or does he play like young Bruce's dad?
He plays young Bruce's dad.
That makes much more sense.
But, that's to start with. Oh. Spoiler alert, he does end up playing adult Jeremy Allen White's dad as well.
Interesting.
With full-on...
prosthetics.
Prosthetics, yeah, which are brilliant.
Wow.
You know how prosthetics have
to
be...
hard to get right, yeah.
Yeah, they really are hard to get right. But I have to say, the ones they use on him are incredible.
And this is the film, the Springsteen film, called Boyding.
Yeah, God, what is it?
Deliver Us From Nowhere. Nowhere. Yes.
Nowhere.
Deliver Us From Nowhere.
Yes. And, yeah, I saw it last night. And they did a fantastic Q&A hosted by Edith Bowman. And Bruce Springsteen took part in the Q&A.
Oh, he was there, brilliant. Because Boyd beforehand was nervous. He was like, oh, I hope he turns up.
Yeah, because everyone was thinking, everyone knew he was in the country because they're doing Graham Norton together on tonight, in fact, I recall that. But anyway, I was very excited because I thought, you know, you think Bruce is in town, he probably should come to this BAFTA members Q&A at the end. And the woman who introduced the film said that, and you know, you should stay in your seats for the Q&A, that's all I'm saying. So she was being like hinting. And then he came on and he was in amazing form, Bruce Springsteen. First of all, he's 76. You know, I'm on this. This is just a whole sidebar of the show.
About a film, but carry on.
About a film. Anyway, he's 76. Okay, and he looks extraordinary. He's like completely ripped, you know.
Really?
Slim, incredible, like magnificent haircut. He just looks incredible, 76 years old. And he was brilliant all the way through. But then what happened at the end, he kind of asked one final question to him about the whole experience of watching the film for the first time. And he launched this heartfelt kind of speech thanking the filmmakers for forcing him to kind of confront some dark stuff that happened in his life. And he said he showed it to his own family now. He's got a brilliant, you know, his wife and kids now. And and as you were saying, everyone was crying. And like, you know, Jeremy Strong, who plays his manager, Jeremy Strong of Succession fame, was literally trying to hide his face under a cap because he was crying so much at the end. It was really quite extraordinary scenes, yeah.
Do you know what? This might be a film I go and see.
You should. If you're not a Bruce fan, it's definitely.
I saw a film last night, a different one. It made me cry as well, but for very different reasons.
What was that?
I'm not telling you.
Oh, no. Because this is a TV podcast.
You can guess, but I will not confirm the answer, Boydie.
Okay.
Yeah.
This week's film was for the Empire podcast.
I can neither confirm nor deny that it was one of those.
Okay.
Anyway, enough of this film bants. That's for an entirely different podcast. Let's talk about television, the small screen, the one in our living rooms, or in Boydie's case, the fuck off massive screen in his living room. What have we been watching this week, Kay?
So this week I've been watching the second series of Nobody Wants This on Netflix, which I'm not going to talk about at length because I hope we will review it. It's the rom-com with Kristen Bell and Adam Brody, for anyone who doesn't remember.
It is indeed, yes.
It was series
one. Your favourite?
Now, we couldn't review that on this podcast, for 'tis embargoed, and we didn't review the first season because it just dropped out of nowhere and was also embargoed. Mm. So there's at least a theme here. I don't know if we'll end up doing a full review on this podcast because there's a lot happening next week and our dance card is already stamped for Pilot Plus this week as well. So we may not. But okay, literally can't review it now because it is still under embargo.
Yes, okay.
But
so
maybe we can chat about it when we've seen it.
Yeah, because I've pretty much watched three quarters of the series.
Yeah, I mean, look, we loved the first season. It was great. It was a bit of a sleeper hit for Netflix. Everyone talked about that. It's great.
Yeah.
Except I will say, I still maintain their podcasting technique is lamentable.
Oh, yeah. Well,
don't use headphones. Their mic control, the distance from the... Honestly, the audio would be unusable.
There's a lot more of that this series.
Oh, shocking.
Spoiler alert, yeah.
Must be a dreadful podcast.
Yeah. They should listen to this one.
They should, if they want to know what a dreadful podcast sounds like. Anyway, go on.
Anyways, I've also been watching... So I had started watching Hacks, the last series, and I'd stopped because I found Ava and Deborah's sniping too much. It was getting unbearable for me.
I did,
because I don't know what was going on in my life at the time. I was like, I can't handle any more of this. But I've gone back to it, and it is really, really good. And then the last thing I want to mention is, Daisy May and Charlie Cooper's Night Watch. So that's on BBC Two. It's going to be out on 26th of October. Any This Country fans or fans of them should tune in, because basically it's them going around haunted places in the UK. From kids, they've been obsessed with the paranormal, and now they are staying places. So like in episode one, they stay in Gloucester Prison, which is not used anymore, but they stay overnight in one of the cells where in a prison where, you know, hundreds of people was hung. So they hope to communicate with those spirits.
Right.
Yeah, but it's fun.
Sounds unmissable.
You're safe. Well, I think you're safe in the knowledge that we won't be reviewing that one then.
No.
Yes. But yeah. Oh, I'm sorry. I thought this was what I was watching. I was just telling you what I was watching. I wasn't looking for your acceptance or, you know, approbation.
No judgment.
I'm just telling you that I watched that because I'm a fan of theirs, and it was very amusing, as people who watch This Country would expect or know them as a brother and sister duo.
You haven't mentioned the Celebrity Traitors, this update, because episode 3 went out last night, because you haven't watched it yet.
Do not mention anything.
Well, now I'm
okay. So is this now the point where I can just do my emails? Is that what we're saying?
Yeah, yeah, yeah. No, you can't, because I'm
he
not going to go into...
He never needs permission from that. He's doing it constantly.
Yeah, as if, yeah. In the normal situation, you could do your emails and your texts and all of that.
But we're not going to.
Replying to offers of hosting premieres, etc. But I can't, because Kaz hasn't seen it yet, so I can't spoil it. Look, I went to see the Springsteen film and the Q&A, and I got back really late, and I still waited up to watch.
I was out at dinner and I wanted to enjoy it rather than... Yeah, so I
mean,
watch...
it has given me a stomachache all morning, to be honest.
What, the Traitors?
I think I ate too late and watched the Traitors and stayed up too late. Yeah, I think
TV
my health
is
in
dangerous.
Decline. It is, yeah. Anyway, suffice to say...
Go on.
It's still brilliant and it really tense.
How's
exciting.
AC doing?
I'm just saying the round table... Alan's doing brilliantly.
I love
him. He is
doing so
brilliant,
much.
Is all I can say, yeah. He's doing really, really well. But Jonathan Ross, I listened to Jonathan's own podcast that he does, but film and TV review podcast he does with his daughter. And what was you doing there?
I'm going to my emails now, because it's like the bit where you said you weren't going to talk about it, but now you are talking about it, and so I'm just going to, you know, keep myself busy.
James, how out of order, considering all the stuff we have to listen to you prattle on about.
Well, hey, I'm simply channeling the listener at the moment, because at least one person contacted me on Instagram to
only one person.
It was literally one person.
Yeah.
To say that they were furious at the amount of time spent talking about reality television. In quotes.
Cool.
So,
well, it is what we're watching. And just to counterbalance that, I was got in touch via the postbag, which was on Pilot Plus, by one person who said they were furious that you like skipping over the Celebrity Traitors chat instead to subject everyone to hours of talking about Taylor Swift.
I believe that. I believe it was actually bollocking on about Taylor Swift. Was the exact wording used.
Yeah, it was a brilliantly worded email.
Yeah.
Anyway, Jonathan Ross has talked about his experience on The Traitors on his podcast, and he was talking about the Resident Entertainment's analysis of the show. He didn't name it. He said a very prominent kind of...
Boyd, is he talking about us?
I mean, he wasn't talking about...
If it's complimentary, it could have been about us.
He was talking about how much they got wrong, how they got everything wrong in their, explanation of what they thought. Yeah, it's definitely not us. So I thought that was really interesting. And then as the more you watch, the more you know what he's talking about, is all I'd say. Yeah.
Okay. Well, I'm double bubble tonight. I'm going to watch both
episodes.
Yes.
So that is ongoing, obviously. But the main thing I've been watching is The Chair Company.
Yes, I've screened this for this HBO show.
Yeah, this is the HBO show created by Tim Robinson, starring Tim Robinson of I Think You Should Leave with Tim Robinson fame, the Netflix sketch show.
So just to qualify, I'm afraid of this show.
You should be.
Yeah, I thought so, because I watched his recent film that he did with Paul Rudd.
Yes.
And I...
Friendship.
Yeah.
Yes.
And it nearly did me.
Yeah,
in.
Like, yeah, same. Yeah, I watched that film thinking all the way through, this is going to destroy James if he has
it
to
did.
Review
okay,
it.
Okay, well, for anyone who hasn't seen the film, why would this TV show make James nervous?
It's high level of excruciating awkwardness.
Oh God!
On a constant basis.
No.
In fact,
there must be some respite.
No. Almost every single scene. The vein of humour it's mining brilliantly, in my opinion, mm-hmm. is the comedy of extraordinary embarrassment, humiliation, and just general pain.
Absolutely not.
And what's brilliant is that the character, Tim Robinson, if you've never seen him, he's got this face and manner.
He's got a face.
He's got this particular face that's very adept at portraying seemingly normal people you'd meet in your everyday life in an office. So this is a show, effectively it's an office workplace comedy thriller thing. But he looks like someone you just pass in the corridor, you know, and you wouldn't think twice about him. He's some kind of normal bland face. But he exploits that to such brilliant use. So because just look at the foibles and the weirdness that people might have beneath the surface, you know. So everything was, he's got families. The opening scene is them taking them to a restaurant. He works for a company that builds shopping malls in America. And he's about to make a big presentation for the first time. He's in charge of launching their next big shopping mall. And he's got to make a big presentation. And he's celebrating this on the eve of the presentation by taking his family to dinner. But the waitress makes it awkward. His son makes it awkward. His wife makes it awkward. It's awkwardness constantly. And then on the day, this is all in the first like 10 minutes of the show, by the way, so it's not spoiling it. Then on the day of the presentation, his colleagues are being awkward. He has to do an awkward thing by having a shot. And then the thing itself, the presentation itself, what happens is a masterful moment of slapstick, is all I'm just going to say. And which again, you don't like slapstick,
nope.
Either, do you?
I can't wait to review this.
Yeah, it's and then from then on, the whole thing is about how basically he has an incident with a chair, hence the chair company, which almost ruins his life. So he sets out to find out why this failing chair is inadequate, and he tries to track down the people responsible, and that's the kind of whole drive of the story. I think it's like 10 episodes. It's going to be in half.
Sounding
an hour
a bit episode. Partridge.
Well, no, it's well, I guess there's a little bit of. It's not like out and out comedy like Partridge. It's less, to use one of James, it's less broad than Partridge. It's going for a kind of inherent realism, in fact, but finding the comedy in everyday excruciating
like
things
the office.
That we all, yeah, it's more like The Office, yeah, for sure. But it's got its own unique, mainly because of him. It's difficult to describe. You know, when you see, it's just his persona is like, you're just like immediately on edge. It puts you on edge. That's the brilliant thing about it. Which again, we'll find.
I might be in James's camp, but I'm going to give it a go.
You've got to give it a go. So it's on Sky Comedy at the moment and now, and it's just started. So I think the first few episodes are up, but I think it's showing it week by week because I think it's going out on HBO week by week as well. It's an HBO show, but it's fans of his work, Tim Robinson's work, of which there are many will absolutely lap it up. And it feels like it's something a bit different because it's a long form. You know, we used to him doing 15 minutes shows and quick sketches, etc. But this is sustaining a whole long-term series, which
long are the eps?
Half hour, digestible.
Doable.
But yeah, I'm really loving the chair company. James, I fully recommend
it. Says Boyd, in violation of every embargo known to man.
Not on this show.
No, is it not embargoed?
It's not embargoed. No, it started already. We didn't get to review it because I don't think we were sent screens, etc. It would have been a candidate to review for sure, but we would have forced you to
was, it, the was it this week?
Yeah, it's. I think it started last week.
Oh, did it?
Yes.
Oh, well, we dropped the ball.
Sorry.
We dropped the chair there.
No, but there weren't screeners. I don't think there were screeners.
I've had screeners for a while.
Have you?
Mm.
Yeah, I have as well, actually.
Yeah. Oh, well, in that case.
Yeah. So I think it's basically one of those calendar issues, but let's not get into that.
It was a calendar issue.
It was a calendar issue, definitely.
Well, everyone can see
what
it
have
now.
You been watching?
Well, so
James?
I have that in my HBO Screeners app, mm-hmm. And I didn't watch it. But next to it in the HBO Screeners app is the show that I have been watching, which is It, Welcome to Derry, which I want to say is next week.
Yes.
And it presumably is embargoed now, and I'm not going to review it now because we'll probably end up reviewing it next week. But that's Andy Muschietti's essentially prequel to his duology of It films. So, yeah.
Duology?
Duology.
Is
I'm going
that
with duology.
Word?
Yeah, it is now.
Wow.
It's a duology.
I mean, two.
A quartet would be four.
A duo. Yeah.
A triad would be three. I'm going with duology for
okay.
two. Yeah.
Okay, fine.
Or a pair, you know, whichever you like.
Yeah, exactly.
But yeah, so I've been watching that. That's been fun, or has it? He said, not in any way reviewing it. Yeah, so there's that. But I need to start what I've been watching properly with an apology to both of you.
Oh my gosh, I love it.
Because I was wrong. I was wrong.
No, I'm not going to be lured into this.
I was wrong about a thing. And I'm here to confess my wrongness, to stand here on my wrongness and be wrong and get used to it, to quote Jeb Bartlett.
Wow.
And that was when you two, I said, incorrectly reviewed Peacemaker. And you said it was terrible and it was like Diet Boys and it was all of these things. And I came back and went, no. I was like, you're wrong. Peacemaker's fantastic and I love it and it's brilliant.
Yeah,
you guys just didn't understand it. Yeah, I've seen all of it now. And you might have been right.
Oh my God.
Wow. Oh my God, Darren, clip this up.
Yeah, because you hinted at this a bit on Pilot Plus, and now the full reality is hit home.
Yeah,
What's gone wrong with it?
It starts well. It genuinely starts well. I think, unfortunately for me, and we're going to record a spoiler special for Peacemaker, not for a pilot, it's going to be an Empire thing, but I'll probably whack it on the pilot feed as well. So it starts very well, and it has an interesting sort of wrinkle, a twist, as it were, in, I think it's episode 6. But it becomes apparent that this is essentially, for me anyway, a complete patchwork of disconnected ideas that don't really connect to each other, feed into each other, or have any meaningful relationship to each other. And then the really interesting things that it explores, it doesn't really ever resolve or explore particularly well. And it feels like, it's almost like each episode, maybe not each, every couple of episodes, it starts with an entirely new idea. It's almost like improv, like they're just making this show. What are we going to do this week? Let's do this. And then like this podcast. And it ends in such a stupid place. And it's the final season, I should say. There isn't going to be a third season.
Oh, that's disappointing then.
And it's just like, I was so... Because the first season is really, really good. And so I found this very, very disappointing. I still think John Cena is great. In fact, I think a lot of the performances are good. Not all of them, but a lot of them are great. But I just think it was a show that really needed some focus and a proper structure and better scripts and a great many other things. And honestly, there were parts of this where I was like, yeah, this is kind of like, it's trying to be shocking in a way that The Boys does so effortlessly, and it's not succeeding.
Yes, that's the point I made.
I know it is. I know it is. And I didn't agree with you. I didn't agree with you then.
Listen,
but by the end, I had come to concede that you were correct.
Aren't there loads of people in the Reddit thing that agree with you about it, though?
Oh, I've no idea. Most of the feedback we seem to...
No, absolutely not. But I'm sure someone told me that there was...
Well, most of the feedback about Peacemaker that I've seen is people saying I'm wrong for not liking the new title sequence. That seems to be the main feedback.
We discussed that.
Which, again, I stand by that. I don't like the new title sequence. But I also don't like the new series, so at least I'm consistent. But speaking of The Boys... I've also been watching Gen V, and I'm up to date with Gen V, and it's really good. There was some discussion online, certainly when we reviewed this, I think the reviewer felt this, that it's actually got better than The Boys. I don't know if I agree with that, but I do think it's good. And it, occasionally, even this has that bit where you can almost feel them actively trying to provoke and to put in stuff that's a bit extreme, and it feels a bit forced. But it's not generally too bad. But it's a really interesting show. Loving what they're doing with the characters, having fun with it. Really looking forward to the final season of The Boys, which I think will be better. But yeah, Gen V's a good sort of gap bridger for me. I've also watched the finale of The Morning Show, which finally appeared on the Apple Screener site about 2 days ago. So I watched that, and I stand by my review of The Morning Show, which is, it's a bad season of The Morning Show, but it's still The Morning Show. So it's still watchable, but it is also...
Do you know what? I haven't continued
not
with
great.
It after us reviewing
No,
it.
Right, I haven't. Well, actually, no.
I will, but...
I haven't got the premiere. But last time I looked,
it speaks volumes though, doesn't
premiere,
it?
Premiere finale.
Finale. Yeah.
Yeah. But
sorry,
it speaks volumes that neither of you have been particularly bothered to see if it's there.
Yeah, exactly.
Because I think that's fair about the season.
Yeah,
although I have been refreshing every day, but
yeah, it was a level of I watched the rest of it, but I wasn't desperate to get to the finale, so I haven't been checking.
But yeah. I think it's still fun. Like it's still the morning show. It's still a lot of fun, but it is definitely. Not as strong.
Subpar.
Yeah, it's a subpar. Is it worse than season 2? I don't know. It might be better than that, but yeah.
Self-question and an answer.
Self-question and answer, yeah.
Did I like it more? Did I like it less?
Did Boydie give it 4 stars like he gave season 2? Hard to say.
Ooh,
ongoing 4-star reference, yeah.
That's it.
What?
There's one other thing I've been watching, though.
Oh, God.
There's one other thing.
Well, this is interminable.
I know.
What?
Hey!
Come on.
I've watched a lot of TV this week. I finally cleared the decks enough to get
below
into blue lights. No, yes, blue decks. I've been watching blue lights.
Yeah.
No, I'm obsessed with blue lights now. Like, obsessed with it. it. So I watched two episodes this morning before work.
Oh wow!
And I'm fully on board. It's quite stressful at times. It has to be said. Like it's I know it's been compared to kind of Northern Irish Line of Duty, which I guess is not actually a million miles away. But what I like about it is, yeah, the characters are great, and I like all the interplay and the sort of police aspects of it fun. But it's the kind of juxtaposition with the paramilitary sort of Belfast type stuff, which I guess I don't know all that much about, you know, on and on the ground, how the police interact with that kind of, you know, really, that kind of undercurrent of political tension, and where they have the, they said that area is OOB, out of bounds, where the police just don't go there because it's not safe. And it's just, yeah, it's quite interesting. But yeah, I'm loving it, loving the characters. Brilliant. Blue Lights.
Yeah.
Season 3, Series 3, as I say, is English.
BBC?
It's on BBC now. Is it all on iPlayer? Series 3?
I think it is, yes.
But yeah.
Now, I think it wasn't initially, and I think they've put it. I'm pretty sure it is.
It may or may not be on iPlayer, we're not sure. But Series 1 and Series 2 definitely are. So watch them. And that's what I've been watching.
Yes. Very good.
Okay, should we move on to this week's first guest? And it is Harlan Coben, whose latest show, Lazarus, lands on Prime Video on Wednesday, but is embargoed, so we'll be doing that on Pilot Plus. But this sees Sam Claflin as a forensic psychologist on the cold case beat, and Bill Nighy plays his dad, his dead dad. So, yes, that's a wrinkle. Boyd, he spoke to both Coben and Nighy individually, but we're going to hear from Harlan Coben first.
Harlan, welcome to the Pilot TV podcast. Great to see you again.
Nice to see you,
after all these years.
Yeah, we've been together a long time. We've been doing
we
this.
We have, yeah. See, this is a great creative duo in some ways. But this project, Lazarus, that feels like a real departure for you, like a new idea, not an existing novel or anything. Yep. Vague, might be supernatural, might not be.
Yep.
Does it feel that way to you? Like it's something different, exciting?
Yeah, well, it's not everything consciously different. It's just the way the story came to me was in a sort of ghostly, eerie, supernaturalish feeling form. And so I just went with it.
How did it come to you?
I just had finished playing tennis and I come out and I look across the street and there's this doctor's office with a psychiatrist in it that I'd taken my father-in-law to see when he had severe depression. And I started thinking about it, psychiatrist's office and all the misery that it hears day after day, week after week, month after month, year after year, all your secrets, your darkest moments you reveal in this room. Where does that energy go? It has to go someplace. Does it seep into the walls? Is it trapped there? And then what happens when the psychiatrist dies and now it comes out? That was sort of the initial moment that I started to think about Lazarus.
But instead of taking the idea like you normally do and write a novel for it, why go for a TV series?
I don't know. I saw it really visually. I saw it on a screen. I've had that happen a couple times before. The Five is an example. Yeah. But I just saw it right away, like in those colors and the neon and the dark office and all those.
It's very stylish and stylized, isn't it?
Yeah, this is probably the most stylized show we've done. Wayne's done a wonderful job of directing it, and we wanted to bring it to life that way, the cool office setting. And you know, plus this cool cast of Sam Claflin and Bill Nighy, you know, dream cast. And so all of that, I just sort of saw it that way. I could have written it as a novel. I also haven't written a novel that has that kind of eeriness yet. Maybe I will one day. But that's how I originally saw it. And I said, let's just see if we can bring it straight to the screen. To me, it's a novel, but instead of going to paper, I just went right to screen.
Yeah. I mean, I know it totally works, yeah. That look that it's got, which is that the office is a beautiful set. And the whole thing has a kind of interesting, I don't know, like a cinematic feel, like almost like a neon. Did you sit down with the directors and kind of discuss that, what you wanted?
Well, I remember saying to him, I wanted like Rex Harrison in My Fair Lady's office, but nightmarish version of it, thing, like a little darker version. And then what I didn't want to necessarily, we've seen the story where the sort of prodigal son comes home to the rural outskirts of the town, where the quiet town where his dad was the local doctor. I wanted the opposite. He's coming into that city. So we put that office on top of a real building in Manchester. It was really funny. I'd gone out of a restaurant one day after we had discovered it and we found the pictures, but I hadn't seen it in person. I walk out and there was the actual building that we were using. So we put that office up top there. So a lot of these things were conscious decisions that we made. I wanted to do something a little different and that would surprise people.
And you used the song Windmills of Your Mind, which is one of my favorite songs from the Thomas Crown Affair, right? What a fantastic song, a different version of it. Whose idea was that?
I don't remember anymore, but it was just the perfect song for that particular setting. We all jumped right on it. Yeah.
Because it could be this whole thing that is all going on in Sam Claflin's Liza's mind. That's one of the great mysteries of the show,
right,
isn't it? Now, I wanted to ask, I don't know if we've ever discussed this before, but where do you stand on, do you like a story with a twist, to know that there is a twist coming up when you're watching a film or something? Or would you rather not know there's any kind of twist and be taken by surprise?
Well, I think when you market it as Harlan Coben's Lazarus, you're pretty sure there's going to be a twist coming up. I have a trouble like writing something where someone goes, oh, I probably won't be a twist. So I think people are, you know, come in to my shows certainly expecting the twist.
That's fair enough.
So it's hard for me to run away from it. When I'm watching a show, I don't know. I don't really care one way or the other. And, you know, I also love the challenge that people are going to be watching, looking for where these twists and turns are coming, and to still surprise them in heartfelt ways. I look forward to that.
Because the reason I'm particularly relevant for this is I think, I haven't counted, but this has twist upon twist upon twist, right? I've watched the whole thing and it's extraordinary. I mean, you may get a twist and then a minute later there's a twist on that twist, which pulls the rug from under you. Which is, did you almost deliberately set out, you know, and Danny Brockhurst wrote a lot of it, or is that just the way your mind works and you just said
it? I think it's the way my mind works, but here, this is what I think, like, I think the twists here are maybe the most organic I've ever had because of the nature of the story, where each twist, for me, a twist, as much as I love the twist, it has to feel earned and it has to be heartfelt. It has to move you in some way other than to just make you, you know, surprised. It's not a card trick. I don't want to just do a card trick. I want it to mean something. And because of the nature of the story, we were able to just do a lot of them here, and that each one should cause a little pang on your heart and take you in a direction you don't expect to go. I don't think the show goes and, you know, you think it's going to be one thing and ends up being others in a positive way. I was really excited about that.
You mentioned the casting, Bill Nye.
Yeah.
Now, the proposition to his, I can imagine like his agent saying, right, but we've got this brilliant role for you, but he's dead. And you're going, oh, okay. Like, did you think we have to kind of tell him, actually, did you send him all the scripts? Did he know the whole story? Because you could think, oh, he's not going to be in that much, but actually he's a very prominent figure all the way through, even though he is dead.
Well, this is it's a funny story. You've known me a long time, so you know I've never said this to you before. This is the first time when I was creating a story where I did have an actor in mind from moment one, Bill. I just thought Bill Nye would be the perfect Dr. Lazarus, but I also thought there's no way I'm going to get Bill Nye. And we sent Bill the episode, I think it's script one, maybe script one and two. And he called me the next day, wanted to hear the rest of the story, and was in. I mean, he was just all the way in as Bill gets. So it was a complete and utter honor, obviously, to have Bill and that involved and really wanting to be talking about the show and just obsessed with it like the rest of us.
And have you taken the opportunity to become friends with him? Because he feels like the best person to get to know.
It's weird. You never should meet your heroes. But and Bill, I had ridiculously high expectations he couldn't possibly meet. And he actually exceeds them all. He is more wonderful than you think he is. He is a dear friend. I love spending every moment with him. He elevated the show, not just on screen, but when he's there. Every cast, every crew, every person that he came in contact with felt better when Bill was there. He's a kind man as well, very, very funny. He's just he's kind of what you want him to be, which is just hard to be Bill Nye, I think.
Absolutely.
With those expectations.
I read that he's a fan of your books, though. So
that's how he got, that's how he agreed to do it away. So
I mean,
I didn't know that beforehand, but it was really quite an honor.
That is what an honor. Yeah, fantastic. Well, congratulations on the show.
Thank you so much.
And all those twists, extraordinary.
Oh, thanks, man. Thank you.
Thanks, Harlan.
Okay, that was Boydie and Harlan Coben. Do we have time for a listener question? That is my question to you, Kay.
Why not?
Why not?
I don't have an answer for it.
Kay says, fuck it, let's do it.
Mm. I'm going to ask it. Okay, so this is from Stephen, who says, what's the furthest you've ever watched a show and still not finished it? I ask because I've got two skeletons in my streaming closet. First, The Walking Dead. I made it all the way to season 9, survived countless zombies standoffs, and then just stopped. No finale, no closure, just a slow fade into the apocalypse. And then second, The Witcher. I've watched every monster, every brooding bathtub scene, every confusing timeline twist, and yet I've got two episodes left in season 3, and I just can't bring myself to finish them. It's like the show cast a spell of meh, and I'm stuck in limbo.
Wow.
So I'm curious, what's the longest TV commitment that ended in abandonment? Bonus points if it was a show that you liked but still couldn't cross the finish line. Yours in half-finished binges, Stephen.
I mean, Mr. Robot was one that we talked about a lot because we jumped into season four on Pilot Plus. But that was one where I watched three seasons of it. And then when season four came around, I just went, nah. I was like, I'm done. I'm out. Sorry. And I just didn't.
Yeah. How many series of C were there in the end?
Not enough, Boydie. Not enough.
I don't think I went back and finished. I definitely didn't finish C, and I watched quite a lot.
Well,
of it.
And that's your loss, really, isn't it?
It is my loss. Yeah. But what that was it? What genuinely was there three series?
I think it was three. Yeah.
Yeah. That's a candidate for me. I did enjoy it, but yeah, didn't have enough.
Didn't have enough wank praying.
Too
for
much James. not enough wank praying. Exactly.
Did I put you off
you
the show?
James put me off. Yeah. Father James was obsessed with it so much.
I loved it so
became
much.
Became a negative.
Obsessed with the wank praying.
Yeah.
Well, specifically, and see the program in general. Yeah. What else? The bit of The Walking Dead for me as well, actually, I have to say.
When did you bail? Like, what season did you bail?
I bailed season three.
Well, that's not... It didn't go very far. No, it ran for like, what?
No, wait a minute. That's not true. What was the one that ended up with the baseball bat?
Well, that's Negan. That's, I want to say six.
Oh, God. I probably dipped in and out, but I did watch six. I did watch most of six. I had to, because I have a session for it at the end of the TV festival.
Oh, my God.
So I had to do a quick catch-up.
Getting with the zombies.
Yeah. But I didn't go back. I didn't finish it. You know, definitely, didn't finish The Walking Dead.
Grey's Anatomy I did 8 years of.
Oh, wow.
I did eight seasons of Grey's Anatomy before
and that's
bailing.
That's like, what, 13 or something?
Oh, I want to say it was eight. I can tell you exactly when I bailed. It was the musical episode. Remember, there's a plane crash and a whole thing happens, and then they have a musical episode. And I watched that and I was like, nope. Nope. I am done. I am out. Goodbye. And that was it.
Yeah.
I don't really have an answer because I tend to finish the things that I really love. So I did start Grey's and I haven't continued.
I don't think you've missed an awful lot.
No, and also now it's because there's so many seasons, I'm like, oh God, it's almost like...
Do you know what? I did it with ER as well. I'm just thinking about that. I think
it's ER. Long-running medical job.
Yeah, that's it. ER had what? How many? Was it 12? I want to say 12, something like that.
I don't know, but
I think I watched like 10, maybe possibly even 11. I didn't watch the last season, I know that, but I watched the finale because I had no interest in watching.
Did you finish House?
No, House, I've literally only seen about four episodes of.
Oh, you've got to go back to that. Yeah. Come on.
No, because I know it's too episodic. You know I go night procedurals like
just,
that.
Just, do you know what? Bell-end. Just get over it. Just get over that aspect.
It bores me. Like, I need connective tissue.
There is connective tissue running through the whole thing as well.
Yeah, but there always is, but it's always quite slight, isn't it? In these kind of episodic procedurals.
No, it's not. No, there's some brilliant episodes that are absolutely all about his relationship between the, you know, his best mate and his boss.
Also his addiction.
Yeah.
What's the woman's name?
I can't remember. Obviously.
Clearly very memorable.
Is it something like that? Anyway,
we don't know. But no, I didn't finish that. Or really even start it, if I'm honest with you. So
I would urge you to go back to that. So anyway, that was Stephen. There are sort of half finished answers.
But I think it's that kind of like a poker's folly thing, isn't it? Where it's good money after bad. Where, you know, you think, oh, I've put this much in, I've invested this much, well, now I must invest more. And actually, I do think, like, when a show loses you, just bail.
You were telling us. Did you finish watching? You were like, oh, I really didn't want to, but I just completed it anyway.
I may have done that, so I'm just not taking my own advice. I think if like, it's like a short number of episodes, you think, well, fine, if it's only one more episode. But like, when it's like, it's going to be an ongoing concern and you're potentially pouring tens of hours away, just don't do it. There's so much good TV, I don't think there's any excuse for watching mediocre TV.
Cuddy,
that's it. Yeah. Not Caddy.
Wilson Cuddy.
Was that the Line of Duty? The Caddy.
The Cuddy, yes.
The Caddy. No, the Caddy, I thought. Anyway, God, I'm
The Caddy. Yeah.
No, that's correct. Yeah.
I'm mixing all my TV shows now.
Yeah. The Caddy was Line of Duty indeed.
Okay, good. Well, that was a question. If you would like to send in your question, the address is pilottv@empiremagazine.com.
Yes, and I would ask for first time emailers as well. For you to also get in touch, because we had some the other day and I thought, actually, it's quite nice. We're recruiting more people.
Yeah, chuck us an email. You don't even need to be on social media. Just chuck us an email.
Yes, and James has taken everyone's pleas seriously and has put the information in the show notes.
Yes, it is. It actually is. It's in the Pilot Plus show notes. It's not in the show notes. So if you don't subscribe to Pilot Plus, you probably can't see them. But that's fine. Should we have some news?
Yes. Should we begin with some stealth news?
Mm-hmm.
And that is that in a classic Apple way.
Oh, yeah, I know what you're going
to
say.
They have rebranded to You and Apple TV. And that was completely unexpected. But they didn't announce it. They just put out a press release for F1, which was obviously in cinemas, but has now come, because it's an Apple film, it's now come to Apple TV, the streaming service. And throughout that press release, they referred to it as Apple TV and not Apple TV Plus. And that was their way of saying, we've now rebranded our channel to be the same name as our device.
On the one hand, sure, you know, simplify it, and it's going to spare me loads every single week when I'm looking at proofs for my TV pages. I have to put in the plus because people get it wrong, and
that's probably aimed at me.
I mean, mostly K, yeah. But at the same time, it's confusing because the actual hardware thing you use
is called an Apple TV
to stream stuff to your TV is called Apple TV, and Apple TV's TV offering in general is called Apple TV, as well as its you know, its originals.
Yeah.
So it makes sense. Yeah, sure, simplify it, but it's weird.
Because it is, isn't it? It's like you've got Apple TV, the device. You've got Apple TV, the ecosystem.
Yes.
And then Apple TV Plus was the subscription tier for the original programming.
Yeah, things called Plus all the time.
Yeah.
Paramount Plus.
So now you've got
Disney
three
Plus.
Different things all called Apple TV. And it's baffling, but it's still nowhere near as confusing as the You and Drama thing.
No.
Or, I'll be honest, the rebranding of Now TV to Now, which was equally silly.
Indeed, but I do want to know if there was a budget for...
Oh, of course there was. Do you know what? There would have been someone paid an extortionate amount of money
to just go up and cross the plus.
Just like rub it out.
But no, but the point James made, which was true, that they didn't even announce it, they just didn't mention the plus in their press release. And
but that looks like it could be a mistake.
No,
I think
some heroic figure somewhere in the Apple organization, which let's face it, is literally the richest organization in the world, when they probably went, you know, let's rebrand it to just Apple TV, let's drop the plus. And everyone went, yeah, that's a good idea. Let's spend $8 gazillion telling everyone. And someone somewhere probably just went, no, we don't need to do that. Just drop it.
Do you know what they should
do? Just drop it. And that's what they've done.
Do you know what they should do with that money they saved? They should invest and sponsor us, and we will talk to. We will constantly remind everyone that it's now Apple TV.
Give me a new laptop and a new iPhone.
Yeah, just basically meet all of boys' demands. I just wouldn't mind a phone that works, and we're all sorted. James will love an iPad, I'm sure.
Oh, sure, give me all the stuff.
Yeah.
They actually announced a new iPad the other day.
Did they?
New M5 iPad Pro. Yeah, send me one
at the
of
moment
those.
It feels like we are sponsored, but we're not getting paid. So
yeah,
let's move on. okay, some news from me is In Between is reboot news.
Yeah, that's the news of the week, isn't it?
Yes. So the show's creators, Damon Beasley and Ian Morris, have confirmed that their production company, Fudge Park, have secured a partnership with Banerjee UK, which paves the way for the return of the hit comedy title, apparently. So a lot of fans will be excited about that. The sitcom first aired in 2008 and obviously became a cultural phenomenon, spawning, guess how many series, James?
In Between Us?
Yep, don't look it up. Three.
Okay, and two films.
Yes.
Three series and two. I've seen every episode of The In-Betweeners, if you can believe that.
I can't.
It's not really my sense of humour.
Have you said this before? It's one of the comedies you have actually enjoyed and watched.
So enjoyed is a generous term. It's decent. I like it, but the cringeness means I don't think I enjoy it. Like, I endure
then
it.
Then why have you watched three series of
it? I don't know.
And how were you able to endure that, whereas you can't endure, like, the chair company? Do you know what I mean? Like,
I think there are degrees of Fremdscheimen, and I think In-Betweeners. It's definitely present, but it's not as excruciating.
Is it also because you could relate?
To being one of the In-Betweeners, yes, absolutely.
Yeah, fine.
What's mad about this story is, I've interviewed various cast members of The In-Betweeners down the years, and
Simon Bird.
Mainly Simon Bird, to be fair, because he's now a very successful director of TV comedies. He's directed loads of great stuff. I remember the last time I interviewed him, which I think was probably for this podcast, actually, thinking, I cannot ask him about The In-Betweeners reunion, even though it's always the thing. Do you know what I mean? There are certain shows that have the elephant in the room question about them, which is always, are you going to do another thing, like Sherlock? If anyone ever interviewed Martin Freeman or Benedict Cumberbatch. Yeah, you're like, I can't bring myself to us, even though everyone wants to really do want to know. Even Line of Duty, still not confirmed that there's going to be another series, even though all the actors now are like hinting so heavily they will be, and that's what Jeremy Kuhn is working on.
Yeah.
Seeing Jeremy Kuhn next week, by the way.
Can you ask him?
No.
Can you get that exclusive?
Absolutely not.
You would be too scared,
I'm totally too scared. But this was like that in between us. I was like, no, it's not true. It'll be like a story in the paper, and you know, that they've rustled up from a nonsensical interview that the podcast they're trying to promote, because the two of the actors have got a podcast together now.
Okay.
So I just didn't think it was a story. Then you look into it, and Variety's reporting, as you read out, that it actually really is.
Well, that quote was from the creators, so it's happening. You've got to accept it now, Boyd. Your dreams have come a reality.
I don't think it's been accompanied by quotes from the cast. I haven't seen a Simon Bird. I want to see a Simon Bird quote about this thing before I even fully believe that it's going to happen.
A Simon Bird in the hand, of course, being worth two in the bush.
Exactly.
Boyd special.
But, you know, in theory, it's mad, right? Because, you know, the show, it was them in sixth form. You know, it was them, they're school students. They're now in their 40s or whatever. What are they going to do? And also, how are they going to bring them together? You know, the film was sent them off as adaptation sitcoms usually do, to on holidays, basically. And they were both massively successful. But the thing
maybe
is...
Maybe it's about them as middle-aged men now.
Well, it has to be, yeah. Right? Yeah, I mean, it has
coping
to be.
With domesticity. And...
Yeah, I guess. But do we want to see that? Isn't the joy of the show... I'm not I don't want to rain
like
on the parade.
It sounds like you're poo-pooing it.
I'm not poo-pooing officially. But I'm intrigued. And I love Damon and Ian are brilliant. And they will come up with something that works, I'm sure. But let's face it, the films were so successful, and the show ended up being such a mega huge hit. It's one of those things that grew and grew and grew as it went on. By the time the third series came along, it was like one of the biggest things on TV. You know, it almost feels inevitable that you've got everything gets rebooted in the end, doesn't it? That's that successful, and clearly that's what's happening. Mm.
There's actually a line in one of the first, I think it's the second episode of Blue Lights, which felt to me like an in-betweeners reference. Mm. When he says, don't be a notebook wanker. Nobody likes a notebook wanker.
Definitely.
And I thought that's an in-betweeners.
Bus wanker has become like a...
Well, it was briefcase wanker was the first one, wasn't it? It started with briefcase wanker. There was also bus wanker.
Yeah, just wanker. Just the word wanker has somehow been co-opted by the in-betweeners.
Yeah. By the way, the thing that I think you interviewed Simon Bird for was Everyone Else Burns.
100% correct. Yeah. Yes, you're right.
No, I'd like to be here to fill in the gaps.
Yeah. In my memory, as I reach senility. Yes, no, it was absolutely for that, yeah. And he did a great job.
Clearly more important, there's Bosch news.
Oh, is
now,
there?
Yes, there is Bosch news.
Another spin-off?
There is... There's another spin-off.
Bosch is never going to die.
It is Bosch Start of Watch, and it's a prequel. Start of Watch. And it is a prequel Bosch origin story. Which has Cameron Monaghan as young Harry Bosch. Cameron Monaghan, who I believe is in Shameless, but is most famous to people, I think, as Cal Kestis from the... from the Star Wars video games.
Oh my God! But... Best known from the definitely Kay. Yeah,
that's Kay, right. Kay knows
that's
him as
how
Cal
I know
Kestis.
Him.
Yeah, that's how we all know.
Oh, Callie, that's how I know.
That's right. Yeah. but yes, he's going to be playing young Bosch.
Isn't there was another spin-off recently, wasn't there, that was terrible?
So that was Ballard. Well, some people are saying it's quite good. I didn't get on with it.
No.
I thought it was so networky. I couldn't get on with it at all.
James Dyer.
Yeah, and for me to bail on a Bosch is no small thing.
For you even to be able to say it's
right,
no small thing.
I bailed on Bosch. Now, will I come back to Bosch? See, to me, Titus Welliver is Bosch. I'm not sure there's a Bosch that I'm interested in that doesn't have Titus in it. So,
Titus, a fan of basic bingers, lest we
yes,
forget.
Yes, absolutely. Legendarily so.
Yeah. Anyway, but James is shaking his head because I've mentioned it.
Unbelievable.
The BB. Yeah,
hey, look, you know, I have Titus's in my, he's in my contacts, but I've got his phone number right here.
Look at
I could call him now on the phone and ask him.
What's the last message you sent him?
I don't want to talk about it.
I love you. I love Bosch.
Yes, I do that. Every Saturday night, it's amazing he hasn't blocked me. I just send him a message just saying how much I like Bosch.
What was the trailer of the week?
Is that a rhetorical question?
It is rhetorical.
Right, okay.
I'll tell you.
Tell me.
It is Amadeus.
Yes.
Amadeus.
Yes.
This is the TV drama version of the Amadeus play and film, I guess.
You legally have to point out it's an adaptation of the play, not the film.
Exactly. There was a film called Amadeus, you may have heard of it, but this is the full-on, in-depth version with the great Will Sharp as Mozart and Paul Bettany as Salieri. And it's written by friend of the pod.
Joe Barton.
Mr. Barton.
Yeah.
And I thought this trailer looked fantastic. I'm fully there for it.
When's it out?
Brilliant film. Do you know what? Did it actually say when it was out?
Oh,
December.
Come on.
December.
Oh, do you know what that is? A lovely birthday treat for us in our birthday month, our collective birthday month.
It is, and maybe even for Christmas as well, in time for Christmas as well.
Nice.
But it's, I know that having hosted the Sky showcase event at Edinburgh TV Festival this year, with all the Sky bigwigs, Phil Edgar Jones, etc., heads of content, legend indeed, that this is their, they're really excited about it. They're talking about how brilliant it is and how this is their big, big event TV kind of thing, that almost like once or twice a year will they go down something this kind of lavish and sumptuous and exciting. Mm. So yeah, it's very exciting.
I'm excited about that. And not to skip over that exciting news, in Barton News, do we have a date for Black Doves, please?
No, have they even filmed it yet?
No, I know. I want a real timeline given to us.
I genuinely
need it.
Having already consumed the new Slow Horses, I need another Black Doves.
Yeah, exactly.
Like, I need that itch needs scratching. Yeah. I need more Black Doves.
You know, when I said last week when The Last Frontier and I didn't get that really easy to spot thing, and I said I just like stuff to wash over me.
Yeah.
That Black Doves, Slow Horses, they're the two shows that I'm like, has my full attention and I want to work everything out before it comes on, like the next scene, because I want to see if I can. Yeah.
I think they've only just been filming Black Doves.
God damn it, Joe.
Speed up. Yeah. Okay, fine. All right. I just wondered if you had some intel.
Does this mean that I can be legitimately furious at Amadeus? Because it is what has delayed Black Doves for me.
Oh, that would be.
That would be churlish and totally on brand.
Yeah, exactly.
Exactly. That's true.
God damn it.
Yes.
Fucking Mozart.
Wow.
Look. We buried the lead, obviously.
Go on.
Go on.
There's a very exciting TV show coming in December. It is a 6-part behind-the-scenes documentary of Taylor Swift's Eras Tour. Yes, it has been announced. It's very exciting, as well as the final night of the Eras Tour, which is in Vancouver. That's going to go out, so we're going to get the newer version of the Eras Tour and a 6-part documentary.
James, I ask you to consider the listener who got in touch to say that you bollocked on too much about Taylor.
This is not me bollocking on. I think you find this is legitimate TV news, as reported by many reputable outlets.
Which platform?
It's going to be on Disney Plus.
Okay, I'm furious at Disney for making this. And I mean, now come on. To deal with it.
She's milking it, isn't she?
I don't know. I want 6 hopefully hour-long episodes.
Do you? I'm sure you do.
That we can review on this podcast.
No.
Oh, yes. No. Hey, no. We didn't do the Taylor documentary on Channel 4, did we?
Yeah.
So I have earned the right to do this one.
Look how he's like, it's like as if that was a gift to me. Usually you'd hate like a documentary on Channel 4. Right, okay, if that's opened that kind of worms, I will be presenting more Channel 4 documentaries.
Okay, sure.
To review. We're playing that game.
Anything else in news?
Yes, there is exciting news of a Split spin-off show.
I can't wait for this.
Called The Split Up. See what they've done there?
Yep.
It's got a great cast. Ritu Arya, Sanjeev Bhaskar, friend of the pod.
Yeah.
Sometime listener. I don't know if he still listens week in, week out.
I think you might have drifted away after you slagged off.
I knew you were going to say that.
Sandman.
I did slag. I was late to the Sandman party. He was very good in Sandman.
Yes.
But he did listen to that. Ariane Nick, Shanini Pyrus, Danny Ashok, Dimitri Leonardis, etc. Moan Rizwan's in it.
Yes.
Another friend of the pod. Henry's in it. Jane Horrocks is in it.
This is so exciting. I love The Split. So that's the Nicola Walker drama. Abby Morgan. Fantastic creation about divorce lawyers. And this is also about divorce lawyers, right?
It is, yes. We're thrilled to announce the cast, blah, blah, blah.
Set in Manchester.
Yeah, it's a 6-part legal drama with story and characters created by Ursula Rani Sama, based on The Split itself, of course. And it's set in the world of Manchester's high net worth divorce circuit.
Oh, brilliant. And also, crucially, a powerhouse British South Asian family firm.
Indeed.
Taking a lot of my boxes. Bring it on.
Split Absolutely. Up.
Yes, that's what it's called. Sorry. Yes.
I was recapping the name of the show. It wasn't like a pronouncement. I was Split Up.
Yeah, thank you very much. Yeah. Did you know, this was I haven't heard of this project, but Variety had an update on it this week, that Matthew McFadyen of Succession fame and Elizabeth Banks are in this show together called The Miniature Wife. Have you heard of it?
No.
It's literally about how the wife shrinks to miniature size. Yep. Marriage is hard.
Honey, I Shrunk My Wife.
Exactly.
Another wife becoming invisible.
Indeed. Marriage is hard, especially when your partner shrinks to doll size due to a scientific mishap. That is the premise of this show. It sounds a whack.
No, I'm going to say it now. I think I'm out.
Well, you can't be out before Matthew McFadyen.
I know, I do love him. And
it's based on a short story by Manuel Gonzalez. I know you're a big fan of his.
Mm-hmm.
And Greg Matola's directing the first episode. He's a good director. He directed the Alien comedy, you know, with Nick Frost and Simon Pegg.
Paul,
thank you. So yeah, but I thought that was a weird project that's done.
It's
about to be screened, and you know.
Do you know what? Maybe I'll get back in because I did like The Borrowers. So
fine. Yeah. It's like The Borrowers for adults. It sounds like a little bit.
Okay.
The Incredible Shrinking Woman.
Okay, I'm definitely calling time on you.
You're calling time, I can tell. Even though there was a Bridgerton trailer, Kate, I thought you might mention
I didn't see the Bridgerton trailer.
No, anyway, just saying.
I saw it was out, I didn't watch it either.
Yeah. But. Oh, just doesn't care anymore.
Well, let's find out if Bill Nye's watched it, shall we? Because he's our next guest. We already told you.
Slick.
There you go. Don't just throw this shit together.
Hello, Slick Rick.
Anyway, yes, we forced Bill Nye to confront Boyd about Lazarus.
Boyd just nearly choked on his juice there.
Oh my
brilliant.
God.
Yeah. And you can
You'll see how the listeners, you will appreciate, I'm sure, how even though I did them separately, Harlan Coben first, then Bill Nye, that I spoke to Bill Nye about what Harlan Coben had said about him.
Boyd, that's because you're a goddamn professional.
Yeah, exactly. So there's a little narrative between these two.
So this is, in many ways, the sequel to the earlier interview.
Exactly. Connective tissue,
part two, if you will.
Exactly.
Yeah. There we go. Lazarus, then. This is Boydie versus Bill Nye.
Bill Nye, welcome to the Pilot TV Podcast. How's your day going?
It's going okay so far, so good.
Good. We're talking about Harlan Coben's Lazarus. Now, this strikes me as being quite an interesting sell when you hear about a role and you think, oh yeah, Harlan Coben, great writer, great concept, but you are playing a dead person. Yeah. Did that at all, you know, have an effect on whether you thought you should take it or not?
No, not. I didn't know I was playing a dead person when I picked up the script. It became clear pretty soon. But I got the first two episodes months before I got the next third and fourth and fifth and sixth. And it was so well put together. And I am a big fan of Harlan Coben's. I've read most of his books. And I knew it was Sam Claflin. So, and I've been in the same movie as Sam Claflin before, but we never actually got to act. And that was a plus. And I was keen to do that. And it was turned out to be great.
So, because Harlan didn't know that you were a fan of his work, I don't think, did he, when he wrote?
No, I don't think so, no. I mean, nobody probably knew. I mean, unless you asked me.
Yeah.
But no, I'm a genre guy, you know. The musculature, I can't even say it.
The musculature, yes.
Yeah, you know. I like the kind of rhythm of it, you know, and I like the form. And I read Elmore Leonard, and I read various other, you know, thriller writers who are great writers. You know, they're not just, it's not just some puzzle that you have to, you know. I mean, in fact, often who did it is kind of not high on the list of priorities. It's what happens along the way and what the characters are doing. You know, they say, you know, they come for the plot and they stay for the characters. And it's certainly the case with Harlan because he's very sophisticated in that way. And he draws them very particularly, and you know who you're talking about, and you become invested in them, and you recognize them or whatever. So, so I'm a big fan of that kind of book.
Yeah, because I'm a huge fan as well of his stuff. I'm a huge fan of Harlan's books, for a long time. Yeah. And it's the twists, isn't it, as well, I think.
Yeah.
He is the master of the twists.
How he keeps doing it. I mean, he's written 37 books. Yeah. Most of them, if not all of them, have been on the New York Times bestseller list. And every one has got some twist where you think you got it.
Yeah.
And on the last page or something, he'll hit it and you go. And then there'll be another little thing.
Right. And because in this show, in this series, having seen the whole thing, it's twist upon twist upon twist. I don't think I've ever seen a TV series with this many twists. Did it feel like the way to you when you were getting the rest of the script?
Yeah. Well, that was how it happened, because I got the first two.
Yeah.
Then it was like, I don't know, 2 months and I got the third one. Then another month and I got, it went like that.
Yeah.
So, and I was like banging around thinking, well, it was obvious she did it. No, she didn't. You know, he did it. So it was, as you say, it's a mind bender.
And Harlan just told me that he wrote for the first time in his whole career as a writer of books and adaptations of his work that he co-creates, he created this character with you in mind. Well, do you know what was he thinking?
I don't know. I don't know without spoiling everything, but I don't know except that it's a marvelous thing to hear, you know, that someone like Harlan would ever come to pass. And I'm not being cute; it just is, you know. It's a big thing.
Most of your scenes in the show are with Sam Claflin. In fact, maybe all of them almost.
No, I also work with Kate Ashfield, someone I've also worked with before. I've worked with both Kate and Sam in other films, but I never got to act with Sam at all. I don't think I was in scenes with Kate, but we never really got to work together, act together. So it was a first in both cases.
And to start with, it struck me that the early scenes where you're interacting with Sam are kind of quite fun in a way. Like you're having you're being quite sarcastic and witty. Yeah. And but then as it goes on, it gets more and more emotional.
Yeah.
I feel like. Do you have a different approach to those big emotional scenes than you do like a normal scene where you're being witty and fun?
Yeah, there is something you have to flick. It's not that complicated or sophisticated. It's nothing sort of woo-woo about it, but you do have to focus a little bit before emotional ones. And also before, the hard ones I find are where you're supposed to be charming and witty, especially if it says in the script, he is charming and witty, then I'm, it's like, oh God, any sense of yourself as amusing leaves the building, where it does with me. But so that I find I have to crank myself up for that in a way that perhaps I don't for the other kind of scenes. But as you say, I mean, it's a roller coaster. And for Sam, I mean, it's a marathon. It's a great achievement on his part. He's in every scene, virtually. And that's months of work. That's like, I don't know, 7, 8, 9 months of work. It's an incredible thing to have pulled off.
And when you're playing, you're both kind of father and son, psychologists, psychiatrists, generally people looking into the science of the mind, I guess. Yeah. Is that an area that interests you anyway? Have you done much research into that kind of thing? Or do you just take what's in the script and go for it?
I haven't ever really done anything of that kind. No, I haven't. I have no history of psychiatry.
Never had any therapy or anything like that?
No, I've never done any therapy. I come from that generation who, thinks that I know it's wrong. And I know probably nearly everyone I know goes to a therapist or an analyst or something. But I just never got around to it, probably because almost certainly because I'm scared, because I don't want to know. I've got enough on my plate without finding out why. Why am I a mess? Well, who cares? I'm just trying to deal with it.
Right.
But no, I'm sure I would probably benefit from going. I think just from going to have someone listen, I think, is probably, I did go once, years and years and years ago, I went once to a psychiatrist, but I never went back. And I remember I was not in great shape, and I remember being so flattered by the fact that he listened to me, even though I was paying him to listen to me.
Right.
But he listened so attentively and with such respect that I found it almost overwhelming. It was like, and then I didn't go back anymore.
I got
a job and I left the country.
Right. Listening, I guess, is the main thing. The show is, when you're filming this kind of show, and it's quite an elaborate set, the main set that you're featured in a lot, beautiful looking kind of office, the office place of your character. When you walk into that set, does that help kind of work, make the whole thing easier? Because it is such a fantastic set.
Yeah. I mean, before, Harlan sent me photographs of my office.
Right.
He said, you've got to see the office. And I was like, all right. But then I saw the office. But I always save the set. It's like in a theatre play as well, although it's more difficult. But I leave it till the technical room. I never go onto the... People say, do you want to see the set? I go, no, leave it till I first walk on, because I want to use it, the surprise of it and the pleasure of it. I want to use it in the first couple of scenes because, it will inform, hopefully, the way you carry on. But when I was not quite prepared for, even when I'd seen photographs, because it's the size of a cathedral, and it was like walking into Batman or something, it was like, wow, these people are serious. And it does help, although my initial response is, oh no, now I have to be good because they've obviously worked so hard. But once you process that, once you've dismissed that, it actually helps because it's a great place to do business,
And do you watch the show back? Do you watch yourself back? No? No, you can't?
No, I wouldn't be able to go to work. I can't bear it. I don't watch anything I'm in. I watched a couple of things when I was young and it was so distressing that I vowed I would never do it again. I don't even do ADR to vision now. I finally worked out, somebody did it for me a few years back, well, why don't you turn the vision off? Because every actor, even normal actors, the nightmare is ADR, which is additional dialogue recording, where you have to go and lip sync where a dog barked or a plane went over. And you have to look at yourself and it's all ungraded. Everybody looks terrible. And it also, for me, I have to look at myself, you know. Yeah. And I never liked looking at myself. Even when I was young and less complicated to look at, I just couldn't bear it. And now I suddenly realized I can just tell them to turn it off, and I just do it audio.
Wow, well, it's well worth watching if you could get over that. It's great.
No, congratulations.
Fair enough. Cheers, Bill. Thanks so much.
My pleasure.
Cheers.
Thank you very much.
Okay, that was Bill Nighy, and time now for this week's reviews, and we're going to begin with The Foresights. Now, this is a 6-part Channel 5 period drama. No, wait, stay with us. Stay with us. Do not switch off the podcast.
You are a monster.
You really are in dick mode.
Monster.
It is a 6-part Channel 5 period drama. But it's also an adaptation of the novels by John Galsworthy and stars, among others.
Galsworthy?
Yeah, Galsworthy.
Galsworthy. Yeah. Okay, there we go. We'll pronounce it that way, shall we? Yeah. And it stars Millie Gibson, Eleanor Tomlinson, Jack Davenport, Stephen Moyer, and Tuppence Middleton.
Your favourite.
Yeah, loads of great people in that. It is set in late Victorian England, sees lots of posh people being stockbrokers and having arranged marriages and stuff like that. Now, I think this is, and we referenced this a little bit on last week's Pilot Plus, attempting to scratch the Downton itch ever so slightly. So the question is, does it succeed? Kay?
I would say it's maybe not in Downton's league, but I would say very much in the Gilded Age, that kind of, you know, I think it's sort of, it's a good drama. And we should say it's written and created by Debbie Horsfield, who was the Poldark writer and creator. So it's got prestige, you know, behind it. And as you say, I think it ticks a lot of the period drama boxes. It's set in Victorian England. As James said, it focuses on the Foresights, a stockbroking family, and it's all about the power dynamic of some of those members, like the siblings in particular, played by Stephen Moyer and Jack Davenport.
I think it's Moyer.
Oh, is it?
Yeah.
Not like Alison Moyer.
Not like Alison Moyer, no. But, you know, feel free to pronounce it any way you like.
Yeah.
It's fine.
Yeah, it's not. It's an R rather than a T. Moyer.
We've heard to a broken K.
Yeah, we've got to keep this in. It's brilliant.
Yeah. Oh, God.
Alf's brother.
Oh, God. Okay, yeah, played by Stephen. So he plays Jolison, is that? Senior. And he has basically inherited the business.
Jolion.
Oh, my God.
Jolion. What did
Jolion.
I say? Jolion.
Jolison.
Is it not Jolion? It is Jolion, isn't it? Yeah, they do pronounce it Jolion. There's a key plot point about the name in the first episode. So, yes.
Okay, anyway, so he plays the eldest son, and he's inherited the family business, much to the annoyance of his younger brother, played by Jack Davenport. And Jack Davenport particularly is furious because he thinks his son, a character called Soames, should be taking that business over rather than Stephen Moyer's son called Joe, because Joe's not interested in it. He's more of an arty creative. Anyways, so he's got sibling rivalry. It's got a formidable matriarch played by Francesca...
Annis?
Yes.
God, that's not difficult, that one, is
I think
it?
I'm... Do you know what? It's now that I've hit a role of saying really, names really? Wrong, I'm scared of saying anything.
She's on tilt.
With Vertigo as well, so it's a precarious situation. And the forbidden love scandals, etc. I think, like, this is standard period drama fare, but well done. I think particularly the person who elevates it for me is Eleanor Tomlinson's character. So she is a seamstress, a lowly seamstress called Louisa.
Of Sherlock fame, of course.
Yes. And of, wasn't she? She's Poldark, right?
She is. Yeah.
Sorry, what did I say?
You said Sherlock.
Oh, I meant Poldark. Oh, sorry.
And she really, I think, because she's somehow connected to this family, and she adds a certain level of intrigue and spice. So I enjoyed it. I thought it was decent, but I'm not saying it's Downton levels, but I think for anyone who's, you know, come autumn wanting to hunker down with a period drama, it's pretty decent.
Also, everyone in it is deliriously hot. Can we
to embark upon the fact that actually, even the older cast, obviously, Jack Davenport still got it from this life.
And Stephen Moyer,
still handsome. Eleanor Tomlinson, you know, great, obviously. But it's the brothers, like, Danny Griffin plays Joe, and he reminded me of a member of the Bee Gees.
I couldn't stop staring
like
at
Barry
him.
Barry Gibb, basically.
He has the most impeccable hair I've ever seen.
And face fuzz as well.
And now, face fuzz.
At this point, I have to question the historical accuracy, because I'm sure...
They didn't have gel back then.
I don't...
They weren't allowed to have facial hair.
I don't think they had this much face fuzz back then.
Really?
I don't think
You know, well, the little pencilly moustaches I totally bought into.
Yeah, of course.
But you mean the fulsome sort of
Danny,
stubbly beard?
Joe's got like a full-on tidy beard.
Wait,
like Noel Edmonds meets the Bee Gees.
Oh my God, what is that?
He really does. And then Joshua Albin as the other brother has like stubble. You didn't have stubble. I don't think stubble was allowed.
Yeah, I think it's certainly not in society.
If any of our historical expert listeners are listening, the ones who point out when we
Boyd,
understand
I'm just
the
saying. Boyd,
what?
I'm going to refer you to this article on BBC,
no less. Okay.
And the headline is called "The Great Victorian Beard Craze."
Yeah. That's different. These are not beards.
I'm saying Lord Grantham always pulled a razor over his
100%, face. 100%. And I think that's probably where I heard it actually. Would have been the creator of Downton,
Julian Fellowes,
talking about how no one was allowed to have face fuzz back then. Yeah. You had to be clean shaven. And obviously, this is a slightly different era. But I'd be surprised anyway.
Well, just one more thing, because I'm now engrossed in this article.
You're on a Google fest.
Well, in the article, it says in the mid 19th century, men throughout North American Europe began doing something most had never done before. They abandoned their barbers, left patented safety razors rusting on bathroom shelves, and began growing facial hair. So maybe it is slightly
accurate. Okay.
It might not be to your taste, but it was.
Boydie's furious.
It was authentic. Yeah. It was authentic.
No. I'm jealous, furious, fulsome heads of hair they've all got. And that's interesting. I mean, I throw it out as a question. I definitely, you know, in my mind, I had it that people weren't having this much facial hair as they were in this day and age. But even moving on from the face fuzz issue, which I'm sure is historically, but any historians who know experts on this period, and facial hair, please get in touch.
Were beardos common in sort of Victorian London society?
Please put this follicular fascist straight.
Absolutely. And you have to have a look at what they're like on screens. They're not just beards, of course, but it's the way the facial hair works. I'll move on in a minute. Anyway, but I think this bears the hallmark of Debbie Horsfield in particular, because she did a great job with Poldark. And what she did with Poldark, kind of similar to Downton in a way, is she managed to create an ensemble of characters, and it's partly down to the casting as well, whereby you know within minutes of meeting them kind of roughly who they are. Mm-hmm. They feel like, you know, living and breathing characters to me, rather than just stereotypes and rather than just like one-dimensional people. And particularly, as you say, I think Eleanor Tomlinson's story is the most interesting, and right at the end that's the scene, and her story is the bit that's going to entice you to watch more. And I think this is a superior period costume drama, and I think it in every way, like I think it's shot well, I think it's got well lit, I think, you know, because I'm waiting for James to kind of comment on the cheapness of it, because it's on Channel 5, but I don't think it looks cheap at all. I think it looks quite sumptuous, and there's a kind of nice golden hue to a lot of it. I think it's well directed. So this is the kind of thing where, we talked about how ITV hadn't had a hit period drama since Downton, and they've had various attempts to do so.
Sanditon,
particularly, we mentioned, and there have been others as well that I can't remember right now. But I think this is better than those. And I think this could have easily been ITV Sunday Night 9 o'clock, and I say that as a compliment rather than if it was from James. It would be an insult.
That could have been ITV.
But I think it could be a bit of a hit for Channel 5.
Also, another thing, sorry, I wanted to mention is that I read an interview with Debbie Horsfield, and in this, what she's done is she's brought the female characters to the fore, where they weren't in the book.
Right,
so I think that's also
Did with Poldark. Absolutely.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. She made the female characters in Poldark were living, breathing, three-dimensional people rather than just foils for the hunky men,
which is
to have their way
to
with them. Yeah, it was more to it than, but there was more to it than just, you know, topless Aidan Turner.
No, although she
siding.
Does satisfy that in the first episode by the boxing.
Absolutely,
scene.
The boxing scene, gratuitous chest action. From
that
the blokes.
There was zero narrative reason for that scene, like none.
I kind of applaud her for that.
Yeah.
But also, what was the fuzz situation there, Boyd? Were you happy with the level of chest hair? I can't remember.
No, well, I don't. I mean, I don't remember, but it wasn't. I don't think it's as big an issue as the face was.
Okay, fine.
Yeah.
He was okay.
Did they do full body waxes back then? I'm not sure they did.
No,
but anyway,
I don't think so.
So I was dreading watching this, as I'm sure you can imagine, because you lost me a six-part Channel 5 period drama. However, it is, I'm horrified to report, a superior period drama. Like, it is good.
Gosh.
But I think Downton works very well. And we talked about this on Plus recently, because I think grounding it in the house, in that very, with these very specific core group of characters in a very confined space, works. In this one, it's this one very clear family and this one very clear company. So it's not a house, but it does have that kind of contained, and then you have these sort of satellite things going on around it. And it, despite myself, I got a little bit sucked into this. And it wasn't just the, you know, the glorious haircuts on a variety of the male actors. But
lovely actresses.
That, oh, come now. No one had hair to match.
Yeah, they didn't have facial hair.
They didn't have facial hair.
No, I meant as in what was keeping him drawn in.
His hair was almost like, I couldn't stop staring at it. I don't know where. It was like some weird alien. I was like, I'd never seen hair as immaculate as that.
This is like you're triggering something in both of you.
I think both of us not having hair. I was like, I want his hair. Give me his hair. Yeah.
Fair enough. He's got lush locks.
Yeah, he did have lush locks. So, yeah, I got sucked into kind of the intrigue within the family, and then there's sort of stuff going on, and then I read a kind of a very brief kind of summation of the show, and that implied that there's another thing which kind of hasn't almost kick-started yet, which is going to be at the spine of this, which I'm sure will stress me out, but nevertheless.
Boy Day, is this a Sunday night? It should be Sunday night, isn't it?
I actually think it's Monday night. It's airing,
So I was going to say, this is perfect for Sunday night.
Yeah, but the thing is, it's like Downton has a coziness to it, which this has less of. Like this, don't get me wrong, I think it has a touch
less
of it.
Less roaring fires.
But yeah, like because there are kind of sort of stressful events in this. So it's not quite the,
James,
you know,
life in Victorian England was stressful.
That's true, because they had to have beards, apparently.
Yeah.
But I genuinely liked it. And also, great cast of people. Like, great cast.
Yeah.
The people.
Yeah. So, and I think that reflects on it, because I don't think like the likes of Millie Gibson was Doctor Who's companion in recently, Eleanor Tomlinson herself.
Tuppence Middleton.
Tuppence,
great,
yeah.
As Francis, Joe's...
Formidable.
Yeah, your friend Stephen Moyer.
Ambitious. Ambitious wife.
Yeah. So these are proper actors. So it's not just any old losers they've cast.
Wow.
It makes a difference, yeah.
This hair thing's really thrown him.
He's really turned, hasn't he? Jesus.
Steady.
Anyway, so if you're in for a period drama, a good period drama,
not to your point about is it Sunday night, Channel 5 doesn't go for Sunday night
it
drama.
It should do.
Yeah, it's interesting. They know what they're doing with their show. I think they probably assume that the ITV and BBC, that's the big night for Sunday. And at the moment, you've got Riot Women, right?
Oh, yeah.
Avenue versus Frauds on ITV, which are two big, funnily enough, two huge female-led dramas on at the same time. Mm-hmm. I know... These days, no one cares about linear TV.
But actually, that's a smart thing then for Channel 5.
Yeah, so I think Channel 5 does still care about linear TV. So they put their drama stuff on when there isn't so much on the other side.
Well, in summary, well played, Channel 5.
Yeah.
Yeah. Much as it galls me to say so.
Gallsworthy.
Yes, I've done. Much as it Gallsworthy's me to say so. Very good. Okay.
It's on, by the way, on Monday, as we've said, starting today. Monday,
on Channel 5.
On Channel 5, Monday the 20th of October, 9 p.m.
What year?
2025.
Thank you.
Next up, we have The Ridge on BBC Two, which is Lauren Lyle as a doctor with a kind of troubled past who leaves her native Scotland to see her sister get married in New Zealand, only to find her sister is dead when she arrives, which is obviously very far from ideal. A simple climbing accident or something far more sinister. Boydie, tell us.
This is a good. I was excited about this show when I first read about it because I love Lauren Lyle. I think we all love Lauren Lyle because
she's great.
Karen Perry herself. She's absolutely brilliant in that role. And this role isn't a million miles away from that. She's like a kind of strong-willed Scottish woman dealing with a lot in her life. She has got various. She's got an addiction issues. Stuff that she is. I assume it's opioids.
Kind of slap patch.
Yeah,
that she puts on.
Slap patch. Exactly.
Yeah,
that she kind of injects into her thigh or ankle
area. Yeah, she just sort of slaps on. It's like it's a slow release, opioid patch.
It's the whole thing, and because she works as a anaesthetist in hospital, so she has access to this stuff. By the way, which is what she's been doing. She's nicking it from the hospital, so she's not
also frowned upon.
Quite frowned upon. Definitely not. Should not be official activity. You work in hospital, by the way. So she's got issues. She's flawed, but she's very interesting. And the first scene set in the hospital is really quite wild with this big overweight man, something happens. I won't spoil it because it's quite a moment in the thing, and that has ramifications for her because, you know, she's kind of ends up being under investigation, and she is off anyway to New Zealand to see her sister who's been living in New Zealand for years. They're kind of semi estranged. It feels like a bit.
Yeah.
Is about to get married, so and she hasn't actually confirmed with her sister yet that she was going to fly over and see her and attend the wedding, but she decides that's what she's going to do. Then on the flight over, there's a really stressful, tense situation where she gets a voicemail. The bloody air stewardess wants her to turn off her fucking phone, and she won't. She keeps getting messages from her sister in New Zealand saying she's coming, etc. And then she gets a voicemail message from her sister sounding in great distress, sounding like she's kind of something's happening to her, that she's fighting for her life. And sure enough, as James has said, the premise is that when she arrives, she finds out that she's dead. She's like a community of climbers and people. So she immediately thinks there's something suspicious about the fact that she seemingly fell off this kind of side of a hill or whatever it is, side of a mountain. And instantly she's worrying about what's really happened. It's an eye-catching, interesting story. I think it's a great role for her. But there's a great scene. It all builds up. She's getting increasingly kind of fraught about the whole situation, which is, let's face it, quite extreme, that for your sister to die on the eve of her own wedding. She unleashes, shall we say, towards at the end of the first episode, which I thought was classic Lauren Lyon. She did it brilliantly. I think it's a really interesting story, and it's quite intriguingly shot and filmed and directed. It feels quite a classy, you know, semi-cinematic show. So yeah, I'm on board.
I love Lauren Lyon. I think she's fantastic, and agree with everything Boyd said. By the way, the thing that she fell off was The Ridge.
Is that why it's called The Ridge?
But yes, I don't know. I just find Lauren incredibly watchable, right? And she's, as Boyd said, she has a lot of the traits of Karen Piri in this. And the fact that she's got this addiction to opioids, a slap patch. There's stuff from their childhood that is unresolved, that keeps on flashing back.
Yeah, it's flashbacks, yeah. You've got to have flashbacks. You've got to have traumatic flashbacks. Childhood, you've got to.
And also, visually, it just looks lovely because it's in New Zealand, right? So it's, well, I presume that's where they
shot
it.
Once they get to New Zealand.
Yeah, even Scotland, boy, don't be anti-Scotland. But yeah, the vistas of New Zealand, beautiful.
the vistas, even better.
What is that? We're all mispronouncing that. Disease.
I know. It's an epidemic started by me. Yeah. Sorry. Wow. I've infected you both. It's a slap patch of wrongness I put on you both.
It is. Yeah.
Sorry. I liked a lot of elements of this. But I have to say the central mystery didn't quite entice me. I mean, I found it interesting, but I don't know if I'm gonna keep on watching. Mm. And I don't know why. I don't know what it was about it. I don't know if because she's got all this stuff going on and she's emotionally removed. I don't know if I just didn't connect as much with the character or this central, like, as I say, was she pushed? Was it an accident? I don't know if I necessarily am engaged enough to try and find out. But it was a decent first episode, and Lauren Lyle is the real draw for me.
Well, that's the thing. I think if I continue watching this, it will be exclusively because she's very good in it.
Yeah.
And I think she's great. I didn't love all of the other characters in it. I think that's partly by design, though, because the point is that mm-hmm. it's a very closed, small community,
yeah.
and it's all a little bit incestuous and insular.
And she's a fish out of water.
Yeah, and she's just like, she's the kind of like the no-nonsense sort of Scott coming in, talking to all these sort of like this very insular Kiwi community where everyone's related to everyone, and it's all a bit like, you know, that's kind of
she
the
does a
the
brilliant
show.
Summary of the
yes, she does, which is amazing,
which is fantastic.
But that's again, and that's very, you know, that brings Karen Piri to mind quite a lot.
Yeah,
but she's very very watchable. But yeah, like in isolation, is the entire mystery that compelling from the first episode? Possibly not, but I think she's probably enough to get people onto episode two, where hopefully it takes off. So.
It's nothing original. In fact, there's like a mini wave, actually, of British kind of Antipodean co-productions where the story is basically someone from Britain goes to Australia or New Zealand and gets involved in investigating crimes. There's like been about three or four of these types of stories recently for some reason. That maybe it's another co-financing with Australian TV and New Zealand TV and British TV kind of works well. So it feels partly like an exercise in that.
Unless
kind of
we
thing.
Forget there was that show about Noel Edmonds in New Zealand.
I wasn't thinking of Noel.
I know.
Does he solve crimes?
I just wanted to make sure he was mentioned again. That's twice now in the podcast.
Yeah, he did.
Along with his beard.
Noel Evans' look was stolen from by the Forsyth's guy.
Oh my God. But, right. When does the rich air?
Oh my God. He's really running out of patience. Wow.
Do you know what he's done? We've pushed him over the ridge.
Yeah, that's it. That's it. I'm on the other side now.
The Ridge is on BBC Two Thursday, the 23rd of October, 2025, at 9 o'clock.
Okie dokie. Also on BBC Two is our next show, which is Leonard and Hungry Paul. This is a British and Irish co-pro comedy adapted from the books by Ronan Hessian, and it stars Alex Lawther as Leonard, Laurie Kynaston as Hungry Paul. Also features Derry Girls Jamie Lee O'Donnell. And yes, it is narrated by actual Julia Roberts, which I, it has to be said, did not pick up
on. No, I didn't.
Until I saw the credits, when I was like, what the fuck? And then I rewound it and rewatched half the show going, that's literal Julia Roberts.
That is genuinely what happened to me. Only because I saw it in the end credits and I was like, I rewound it, and I had to rewind it so many times. I thought, wait a minute, am I imagining it's her? Is it just another person? Because I thought,
that's
I can't
exactly
go on the pod and say,
thought,
oh my God.
And it's actual Julia Roberts, yeah.
How brilliant. How did that come about? Do we know?
I can tell you.
Well, Boyd can tell us, but fine. I was going to turn to our correspondent, Hungry Kay, but apparently I can't do that, so I'll just turn to
Well, I happen to know the director.
Go on. What did the director say?
Andrew Chaplin comes to Arsenal quite a lot, and he directed Almond's Not Normal. He's a brilliant director of kind of comedy, and basically it turned out that Julia Roberts was a massive fan of the book. So this has been adapted from a book by Ronan Hessian, and so they thought, oh, maybe she'd want to.
What, has she spoken about that? Or they someone
yeah,
new?
Yeah, I think
or...
she spoke about it. Yeah, she'd been given a copy of it or something like that, and he went over and recorded her audio, doing the narration.
I love the fact that she did that, because the thing about that is, obviously, this Hollywood A-lister is a narrator, but this is so unshowy and sweet and understated.
The contrast is brilliant.
Yeah, it's a real good juxtaposition. So, as James said, Alex and Laurie play... Laurie?
I'm going to assume it's Laurie.
Okay. Play... best friends, and Leonard is a ghostwriter of children's encyclopedias, and Paul is a postman, and they're very insular, and they're best mates. They love playing board games together, and they've got very small world, and they're happy with that. Leonard lives with his mum. His dad died when he was a child, but then tragically his mum passes away too, and so he is left in the world, cast adrift, and has to kind of come to terms with the loss, but also like come to terms with the fact that actually probably he should expand his horizons, and that includes kind of embracing his burgeoning feelings for his colleague, Shelley, who's very bubbly, his co-worker, played by Jamie Lee O'Donnell, who's really good in this role. And I have to say, I really enjoyed this. It's such a gear change from the other shows we watch. It's very gently paced, which I know won't appeal to a lot of people. Maybe James, I'm looking at him. Because it's one of those shows where you're sort of just enjoying being in the company of the characters and watching stuff slowly unfurl, which does very slowly. For me, the big draw is Alex. I think he's got such a sort of winsome charm to him, and their connection with Jamie Lee is just so nice to watch. Like, his face literally lights up when he sees her, and you're just so willing him to be able to express how he feels and embrace this and really go for it. So I basically think if you enjoy shows where not a lot happens, you know. no, because it's true. Because you have to be that
that's
way.
That's one for the poster.
Yeah, if you enjoy shows, but not
no,
a lot
it's
happens.
Not high octane. It is,
no,
it,
I agree.
It revels in the fact that it's slow paced, and
it's
I think
all
it should.
About,
It's
all about gentleness.
Yeah,
this is a show which is boldly, I have to say, telling its stories and establishing its characters in the most gentle way possible, and that is the whole
and it's
kind
wonderful
of
because of it
point
and
of it
extremely whimsical.
It is whimsical, but I think this is one of those things where you either go with the tone, the whimsical tone, gentle tone, or you don't. And I can absolutely see, I'm waiting for James, obviously. I'm on tenterhooks.
I went with it. I enjoyed
it. So I did as well. And not just, and I do, hands on the table?
hands on the cards, which are also
cards
on the table.
On the table. I do know the director, Andrew, he's brilliant. But honestly, I if I didn't know that, I would have enjoyed it as well. I really like its attempt to be different and to be kind of like to revel in its characters being nice, decent, lovely people, and it whole tone of the show being nice, decent, and lovely at the same time, including Julia Roberts' narration. And I think it's a celebration of that tone almost. It's so it's so kind of celebratory of friendship.
Yes, and nothing's introverts forced as well.
Completely introverts, yeah, absolutely. So when Jamie Lee O'Donnell's character comes in, there's a little bit of a shaker-upper. She's extrovert, right? But that clash of introvert-extrovert between her and Alex Lawther's character is fascinating to watch, and they do it so, again, they every step of the way, it's very, very careful.
And it's very organic how it happens.
Yeah, I agree. Yeah, stylistically, it's very Wes Anderson. I think, you know, it's got that a lot.
Not quite. I know exactly what you mean. Again, it's a slightly whimsical aspect to it, but it's not quite as.
No. It's Wes Anderson light.
Much more dialed back. Of course, yeah. I mean, definitely has a hint of that.
Some shots are Anderson.
It reminded me of Brian Fuller, actually. Like it brought Pushing Daisies a little bit to mine. Not quite with the primary colours, and Pushing Daisies obviously is again, it's like Wes Anderson, but in a slightly different direction. It's slightly more extreme. Yeah. But partly it was the narration, because I think the narration gives it an added kind of sense of slightly wispy, bouncy whimsy. And it's just
a mellifluous voice.
Yeah, there's a coziness to the narration, which I found quite hypnotic. There's an ASMR quality to this whole fucking show.
Yeah.
There really is. Mm.
This is going to this show will calm your nervous system.
Yes. Well, what a contrast as well. Alex Lawther, who we interviewed on the pod for Alien Earth, is playing
which is not whimsical.
it couldn't be further from his previous role, and I think that should be celebrated. And I think they're all really great in it. Laurie Kynaston's fantastic as well.
It's very easy to watch.
Well, it feels like an antidote to Looks Around Everything at the moment, which is quite nice.
I think that's deliberate. Yeah, I think it is. I'm 100% trying to be
as nice. Alluded to by me in the podcast, the Pilot Plus episode when we were talking about that.
Okay. Remember? Yeah.
Yeah. Right. Leonard and Hungry Paul.
What should you call it?
Leonard and Hungry
Paul. I thought you said
Lenore. Oh, I might have mispronounced. Should I articulate better? Leonard and Hungry Paul.
As I'd like to say, Leonard.
Leonard and Hungary Paul, which you can find on BBC Two.
I'm parodying myself now.
Oh, dear. BBC Two today, Monday the 20th of October, 10 p.m.
10 p.m. Brilliant. What else is on this week, buddy?
This week, we've got The Walking Dead, Daryl Dixon.
Yes. Do you know what? I completely forgot to talk about that.
Well,
I had meant to do a little capsule review of that, but I won't do it. All I will simply say is I've seen the first episode of it. As always, I can't stop watching The Walking Dead. I just can't do it.
That's the one you know, I referenced the fact that you're watching something and you don't know why.
Yeah.
That's the one we've been talking
all of these,
about recently.
All of these different ones, the Dead City, all of the Walking Dead things I am still watching. I've seen this first episode. It takes place in London, and they encounter Stephen Merchant.
Oh, that's exciting.
Will be on this podcast next week to talk about it. So there you go. That's a gift to both of you.
As a total surprise to
We always find out what's happening.
I'm speaking to Stephen Merchant next week for this very podcast. So he will be on next week's show talking about zombies.
Zombies. Communication is key for us, as always.
Oh, absolutely.
yeah. It is on the planner, but only just put it on the calendar. Sorry.
Planner?
The calendar, the colour-coded calendar.
I think you said you put it on the planner, but not on the calendar.
No, it is on the calendar.
Same thing.
Okay, this has gone beyond parody. Lazarus, as we have discussed with not just the showrunner, but also the star, is coming to Prime Video on Wednesday.
Correct. Nobody Wants This, which Kay mentioned before. We just stopped herself from reviewing it in full.
It's embargoed until Thursday.
Yeah, it's on the Netflix on Thursday, the 21st of October. And 911 is back on Disney Plus on Wednesday, the 22nd. This is the smash hit Ryan Murphy produced drama about first responders in LA that is quite entertaining and hugely successful. Very Murphy-esque, yeah. The Kardashians are back, Kay, on Thursday the 23rd.
Don't you worry about that. I've got it on my calendar.
James got it in his calendar. It's always the calendar.
His iCal with a K.
Yeah. I tell you what, there is on Friday. Is it a film? Is it a one-off
vigilante
documentary? Who cares? It's brilliant. Stiller and Mira, Nothing Is Lost. Ben Stiller about his parents.
Oh, yeah.
Documentary about living with his parents. It's Apple TV. Apple TV.
Apple TV minus.
Yeah. And, just, you know what's coming to ITV on Sunday, James? They're showing
Trigger Point.
No. Trigger Point is coming. We'll be doing that next week. Yeah, probably.
Well,
depending.
Maybe there's a lot of other stuff out next week.
There's a lot of stuff out next week. Blah blah blah. But Star Trek: Strange New Worlds is coming to ITV One Sunday night at 10:20.
Oh, instantly turning on ITV.
Quite a prominent.
I don't think you should be allowed. I think the bosses of ITV should cut you off at the pass because I think you've just been so outrageous.
I mean, it's
them.
Fine. I've seen all the episodes already. So.
Exactly. But I was fascinated by that. Yeah. So they've acquired second rights to it, and they're showing it Sunday night, kind of after the big Bane drama, you know, which will be indeed
Trigger Point
yeah. from next week. So yeah, lots happening. Oh, and there's Hollyoaks and Brookside crossover.
Okay, we're definitely not talking about Hollyoaks.
Well, I am, just because it's Brookside, not Hollyoaks. Forget
or Brookside.
Brookside was legendary.
Oh my
Sue
god,
Sue Johnston.
Anyway,
anyway, that's happening. E4 Wednesday.
Fine. What is our pick of the week?
Do you know what? I'm going to go Leonard and Hungry Paul, actually, because of it being so different and much needed at the moment.
Yeah, I'd go along with that. Yeah, I think it's Leonard and Hungry.
Agreed.
Oh,
fabulous.
A rare agreeance.
There you go. That is it for this week's show. I've got to get down to the Empire recording in 60 seconds.
Oh,
so,
I wonder what was happening.
That's why we've been moving along with quite a clip. Yeah. We did start late. Jeremy Allen White's fault.
Twit twoo.
Indeed. Right. So if you want to follow us on social media, at Boyd Hilton, at Caribera, at James C. Dyer, at Pilot TV Pod, please leave us a 5-star rating and send us cake. I think that covers everything. Yes.
Yeah.
Excellent. On next week's show, as we've merchanted,
Stephen Merchant
will be on the show next week. Stephen Merchant will be on the show next week talking about The Walking Dead, Daryl Dixon, which is in its third season. What else is out next week? It Welcome to Derry does land on Sky. That's on the Monday. We've got Down Cemetery Road, which is the new Mick Herron on Apple TV. Star Wars Visions, we will not be reviewing that, but that's on next week on Disney Plus. The Witcher season 4 arrives. Art Detectives, there's Robin Hood is next week as well. So yeah, we've got quite a full slate. We don't know what's embargo, but we will figure it out.
It's very complicated, yeah.
It is complicated. Always complicated here. Mm. Anyway, that's it. I've got another podcast to record. And Kay is very, very hungry. And for those of you not listening or who couldn't listen, I turned down Kay's mic so she could stuff a cinnamon swirl in her face because she was feeling low energy towards the end of the podcast. So if you suddenly felt Kay like suddenly surge forward in a big sugar rush, that was the reason why.
Yeah, vertigo and tinnitus.
I like the way
combo.
He's got like 60 seconds to get to this
I
thing.
Know,
he's
still got time
taking
to
time
me off.
To take the piss. Yeah, exactly.
You know. Anyway, I'll say
priorities.
For you, pilot out.